Bix Weir, analyst and researcher. He has some great material for our silver aficionados. Welcome on your debut appearance here on Gold Seek, Bix Weir.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Before we get into anything else, let's talk silver. I think I mentioned before the discussion that you make some astounding claims regarding, I think, the prospects for AG. My listeners have had their eardrums worn out on the reasons behind why we need silver in every portfolio, everything from the astounding industrial applications that detractors try to use as a reason not to own silver. And so you've got some great material as to why even three-digit silver may be a low-ball estimate.
My interest in silver goes back 17, 18 years with GATA in the early days, and you know, we knew people were rigging the markets. We didn't know how. We didn't know exactly who it was. And we thought it was the banks. And you know, mainly it was gold back then. But you know, once you learn about the silver story and what's going on behind the scenes and how little there is left, you quickly make the realization that silver is a much better metal to own as far as potential for appreciation when the manipulation ends. I worked with GATA for 10 years, you know, with Bill Murphy and Chris Powell, trying to track down who's doing this market rigging, who's doing the price suppression. And I kind of split off in about 2008, 2009, because I think I discovered who was doing it and why they were doing it. And it's all done with computers and derivatives. As we know, the amount of derivatives that are traded vastly exceeds the amount of physical metal out there. So, my work in the last 7-8 years has been tracking down, you know, who writes these programs to rig the markets, how rigged are they, what kind of volumes are we talking about such that they can slam the price of silver from $50 down to $20 with a click of a mouse. And that's kind of where this strange trip led me, and it led me right to the halls of the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury. So we go from there. They have full control right now, and I do believe that they will let go of that control at some point. And that's when you want to be in physical silver, holding it in your hands and ready to ride that price to the moon.
Exactly. This is what I wanted to get into today. I want this to be the focus, the crux, at least, of the first part of this discussion. Your seminal research into the computer algorithms and programming behind the scenes that allows, let's just say allegedly, because from what I've read and what I've heard in previous interviews, this is really groundbreaking stuff.
Well, it is, and it goes back to the early days of computers back in the 60s and 70s when, you know, computers were just being really invented. And the first shareable computer program was a program called BASIC. And BASIC, I don't know if you remember it, but it was written by a guy named...
I cut my teeth on BASIC.
Yeah, if you took any computer classes in the beginning, you had BASIC, you had Fortran. But the very early days, it was BASIC because it was the first shareable computer programming language. Now, the guy who invented BASIC was a guy named John Kimony. And John Kimony, really brilliant man, basically invented the ability for individuals to program and use computers back in the 1960s. But his best friend was a guy named Alan Greenspan. And Alan Greenspan, as we know, used to be a huge gold bug. I mean, he wrote the paper Golden Economic Freedom, and he was a gigantic gold bug, but most people didn't know that he was a computer expert in the 1960s. Writing programs using John Kimony's basic computer language, Alan Greenspan was the first guy to invent the banking programs that we use today. You know, today we look around, it's like everything is electronic money. There's very little physical money and very little gold and silver. It's all electronic. But Alan Greenspan was the guy who wrote the very first programs, and he was working with Arthur Burns, who was his mentor. He was the head of the Fed at the time. But Alan Greenspan actually blamed himself for the Y2K problem because he was the guy who programmed only two digits instead of four. So it really goes back to the very early days of computers and how the Federal Reserve Bank and Alan Greenspan and a couple other people within that close circle invented these computer programs to rig the markets in order to go off a gold standard. Because normally when you go off a gold standard, you've got, you know, 8 to 10 years before it all falls apart. Unless you rig the prices of everything from gold to silver to oil to all commodities to the stock market. And you can do that if you have control of computer programs. And the reason I found all this out was documentation that came out of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. Talks about this, it's a comic book that talks about this character, Ruta, Root A, which is a term in the very early days of basic computing. It is the root foundation of our monetary system, of the programs behind the scenes that run on a monetary system. So all that came out, and then there's so many items that I would connect and link, and you can see it today with the volumes that are traded of silver on the COMEX. I know a lot of people say, oh, it's traded 100 to 1. It's so fraudulent because, you know, 100 times the electronic metal is trading versus the physical metal. That number is very wrong. It's not 100 to 1. It's over 2,000 to 1, and that's just on the COMEX. So people need to get their head around the idea that the price of silver can be manipulated and suppressed with a click of a mouse from the basement of the Fed or the Treasury. That's where they have their trading rooms. So really interesting stuff, a lot of backup documentation and information and things coming out that are really confirming what I've long suspected, which is there is a plan to control the system via computers by controlling gold and silver prices, and there is a plan to destroy the mechanism that controls it by printing so much money that people won't accept it anymore. And that's kind of where we are with the United States.
Who'd have thought that Sir Dr. Alan Greenspan is Mr. Robot, is Elliot? It's better than science fiction. Major hat tip for, I think, being the first to uncover this and make it public in a very easy to understand way. Can you give us a quick synopsis, 3 bullet points from your excellent article that we've already published, we're going to publish again and keep disseminating it, but 3 of Bix Weir's favorite bullets for why silver is a 3-digit plus metal and how it's going to get there?
The first one, and the most important, if this manipulation ends, which I think it will at some point, it's going to come down to who has physical in their own possession, physical silver in your own possession, not held anywhere else. And that's where the key is. The silver to gold ratio is artificial. It is not the price ratio right now at 70 to 1 or something like that is ridiculous because the availability of physical gold and physical silver is right around 6 billion ounces each, which is a 1 to 1 ratio. And gold is great. I love gold, but there's a lot more gold than they're telling you out there. And you don't really need gold for anything other than storing it for monetary reasons and jewelry, maybe. Silver is a completely the opposite story. You need silver for monetary purposes. It's the most used monetary metal in the history of monetary metals. But the key is technology has changed. Technology consumes silver. It doesn't save silver like gold is saved in a vault. Technology consumes silver. So most of the silver that has ever been mined in the world, which is 50 to 60 billion ounces, is now in landfills, is on the top of roofs and in solar panels, is exploded smart bombs. It is scattered in little tiny pieces all around the world. So that 50 to 60 billion ounces that was available potentially maybe 50, 60 years ago, now is all gone because it's been distributed in little tiny bits in landfills in your cell phone, in your flat screen TVs. So the difference between the price ratio of gold and silver versus the amount of available of each, amount of available physical of each, is night and day. And that's why the biggest reason, I think, at some point in the future when the silver rigging stops in the electronic markets, I believe that silver and gold will cross 1-to-1 ratio, which is a gigantic move, obviously, from where it is today.
For our high school econ majors, you know, or college econ majors, an inelastic demand curve. It just basically means that we need so much silver. Okay, it's so integral to our manufacturing and production. You mentioned solar panels and photovoltaics. Nevertheless, we have tons of the stuff just in soldering. It disappears forever. The soldering in your laptop, your cell phone, in the walls, in the doors. Oh, how about just light switches? It's gone forever. It disappears, and it's an incredibly useful substance, the most malleable, the most reflective, arguably the most electrically conductive, antimicrobial, it's an antibacterial, probably even antiviral. Let's look at the drachma in Greece. I think there's a 600-700 year period of stability where the only real money in circulation, for the most part, was a silver coin. Fast forward to the United States, 100 years of economic dominance and stability. And what did we have in circulation? By law, you know, drum roll, please, up until recently, but the bad money has driven out the good. Thank you, Mr. Grisham. So here we are today, Bix. Where does this all lead?
Well, I think we're coming close to that point where we're running out of silver. And the reason I think this is something that happened in 2016, and not many people have commented on this, but we all know the COMEX and the LBMA, they don't trade real metal for the most part. Mostly it's futures and options contracts. It's all futures and options on the COMEX. The COMEX volume for silver went up 45% in 2016. This is an unbelievable number, but in electronic contracts, they were trading an average per day of 400 million silver ounces. The need to rig the markets and control the price of silver is getting harder and harder for these people. And if you look at, if you take the average daily volume of silver traded on the COMEX and you expand it out to say how much silver was traded on the COMEX in 2016, it's over 100 million ounces or 100 billion ounces of silver, which is ridiculous, as we all know, because there's only been 50 to 60 billion ounces ever mined. So it's getting harder and harder to rig the silver market. Gold is just the same. Gold's up 51%. The amount of derivative trades versus how much physical silver is out there. To control the price, they need to layer more and more derivative trades on top of it, and that's how the prices are getting rigged. And we had a great confession from Deutsche Bank, and they turned in all their friends of market riggers, and the CFTC hasn't done anything about it. There's a lot of news to come out about that in the coming months and years, because this is an admission of what GATA has been saying for years, that the bullion banks rig the gold and silver markets. This is an admission in court, and there's a list of banks, and all those banks that are on the list of those who got turned in are on the LBMA. There's five members, clearing members, and they're all on that list. So, yes, GATA was correct all along. The silver price is rigged. The gold price is rigged. And you need to get in before the rigging goes away.
All right, Bixware, what about the skeptic in the audience saying, what's this I hear about silver shortages? Isn't silver a major byproduct of nickel and particularly copper production?
Well, I say that's a great example of what, you know, we're going to need going forward. I mean, how much silver, physical silver, is really out there? Nobody really knows. According to LBMA, they claim to trade over 129 billion ounces of physical silver every year. Again, another report that's completely ridiculous. The fact that the amount of silver mined and available is going to grow is true. And the same is true for the amount of uses we will find for silver. Silver is still the best conductor of electricity. We are living in a technological age, and those inventions and technologies that Donald Trump talked about in his inauguration speech are coming true, and they will stop holding back the ability for people to create and innovate new electronic forms of energy, forms of communication going forward. Really exciting for silver, and I'm glad that there's more silver. Bring it on. Bring on as much silver as you can, because they're printing up way too many dollars, and what we need to do is get rid of the electronic fake silver that's traded on the COMEX and the LBMA.
I'd like your thoughts on what happened recently during our presidential election. I think, in fact, it may have been the actual day. In India, I'm bringing this up to all of our guests in the past couple of weeks, and price spike up to over $3,600 a moonshot on the yellow metal, on news that they would be returning to a more digital currency. Folks might say, well, it's India, it's contained. But I worry if it's not really the canary in the proverbial mineshaft. What happens when people en masse really wake up to the idea there's something wrong here with our greenback?
You got to remember that price is determined on the COMEX and the LBMA. And for gold, they have on the COMEX, 27, 28 million ounces of electronic gold trade every day on the COMEX. So these numbers are not real that you see, the $1,300 or $1,200 or the $18 for silver. These are not real numbers. These are electronic computers trading back and forth. The majority of these trades are the bullion banks working for the U.S. Treasury and U.S. Fed? The whole concept of, oh, it spiked, the price spiked because of something else, is kind of irrelevant because it really doesn't matter. They control it with a computer. They can change the price from $1,300 to $13,000 to probably $100 with a click of a mouse, because it's unlimited the amount of sell orders that they can put in if you're the U.S. government and the Fed, because you don't have the CFTC watching you, obviously, because you know they haven't come down on the silver or gold manipulators. So, yes, there are a lot of signs. You can give me a million different signs why silver and gold should spike. But the question is, how high should it spike, and how high will it spike without the manipulators in there, you know, trading electronic contracts back and forth? That's the real exciting thing. Everything else, we've been arguing these points since, you know, the 90s, how gold should go up because they're printing so much money. And, you know, there's 50 million reasons. But ultimately, it comes down to who controls the price of gold and silver with what computer programs and when they're going to end that game.
Who controls the price of the precious metals and what are the implications, please?
Well, it's the Exchange Stabilization Fund. It's run out of the basement of the U.S. Treasury at the Federal Reserve. The basement of the U.S. Treasury has a trading floor, computer trading floor. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York runs the operations from the New York, and then they've got the bullion banks and people like J.P. Morgan, who actually admitted in court in the lawsuit in 2003 that they were an agent of the U.S. government. It was a lawsuit by Blanchard and Company against J.P. Morgan and Barrick Gold. And in their memorandum asking the judge to throw out the case, J.P. Morgan said, we are an agent of the U.S. government. You can't sue us because we have sovereign immunity. That sums it up right there. That's why you don't see J.P. Morgan's name in all the lawsuits for silver manipulation that are coming out of the Deutsche Bank situation. So, yeah, it's all done out of the basement of the U.S. Treasury and U.S. Fed using the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Real interesting thing now, they've put Steve Mnuchin, or trying to put Steve Mnuchin, as the head of the U.S. Treasury. He was the head of computer trading at Goldman Sachs. And that's a really scary deal. They tried to get Vincent Viola as head of the Navy. He was the head of Virtue Financial, which is a computer rigging company that is in charge of the SLV and GLD rigging operations behind the scenes. So, yeah, I don't know if Trump's going to continue the market rigging or stop the market rigging, but there's enough countries in the world that know exactly what the U.S. is doing that I think it's a good time for the U.S. to stop doing it because it's no longer beneficial. All the metals going east, it's no longer beneficial for us to rig the markets when China's cleaning our clock. So I think it's time to end this game and go back to free markets where you have people walking into exchanges with metal and with money, and the exchange happens, and then they walk away.
Then in this chaotic system, what will be the tipping point? What puts us over the edge?
It's going to be a click of a mouse, ultimately, that ends the rigging of gold and silver, which will end everything else, because there's so many derivatives piled on to all these things I've talked about. And everybody talks about that, hundreds of trillions of dollars in derivatives that almost imploded in 2008. Well, we're at that point again. The next time that someone like Hank Paulson goes into Congress and says, we need $700 billion to bail out the banks or the whole world's going to end, the next time they're not going to bail out the banks. They can't. They're going to be going to Congress for $20 trillion instead of $700 billion. And the people have learned so much in the past 8-9 years that they're going to say, no, we're not going to allow this game to go on. And then we're going to have to start something new. And that's a whole other discussion. But there are plans for that at the Fed Boston, and that I talk about in my Road to Ruta work. And it's real interesting. And I think we could come out of this pretty good. But a lot of people will lose a lot of virtual assets.
Obviously, our officials have carte blanche opportunity, deep pockets, or maybe they have the deepest of pockets. As you mentioned, they're in cahoots, if you will, with J.P. Morgan, and that's nothing new. I mean, go read about the actual J.P. Morgan himself, even the creation, as I understand it, of the Federal Reserve. This is nothing new. Obviously, there's going to be people listening to our voices who own StreetTrax SLV, the silver ETF, and there are other paper promises out there. It seems as though you would be an advocate of physical precious metals.
Definitely. All our exchanges today, the stock markets, the COMEX, the LBMA, are all run on fractional reserve systems, and you can tell by the volumes traded. If you look at SLV and GLD, first of all, they allow shorting, which completely it takes away from the fact that you're supposed to be buying physical when you buy a share of SLV or GLD. By allowing shorting, people are buying thinking they own an ounce of physical silver when they don't because it's been shorted. That's one problem. Another problem is the amount of the volume traded on those exchanges and all exchanges in stocks and bonds and currencies. They trade in huge rehypothecated fractional reserve system. So SLV, I don't know what the total float of SLV is right now, but it's usually 10 to 15 days everything trades because of these high frequency traders. You know, they have trades going off at the milliseconds, and a lot of these trades are never settled. Settlement meaning the contracts are exchanged, the money is exchanged, and the share is changed into your name. That doesn't happen anymore, and the SEC has even said there's over 200 million shares not settled every single day on the stock market. The problem is when the music stops and these derivatives go off, you're going to have 10 to 15 people saying, oh, I own a share of SLV for every share there is out there. So it's a fractional reserve system. They all deal on net pools. All these brokerage houses deal on net pools. At the end of the day, they net out their buys and sells, or they're supposed to, and they still can't even do that. So very, very problematic. And then if you have the banking crash, you've got another problem because there are counterparty risks between you and your money because all these brokerage houses use the banks. The banks go down, the brokerage houses go down.
It's reminiscent of MF Global, maybe mixed in with a little Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers.
Those were one-off instances that were able to be contained. It was difficult to contain them, but they were able to be contained. This is going to be everything at the same.
Systemic. And I know that folks are then wondering, what's next? I think you alluded to that. I mean, we've been speculating here for several months that you might see a cryptocurrency backed by either silver or gold or some other means. But, I mean, we've never had a totally global, interconnected, fiat-based system with very few exceptions.
I agree, except it's not just the global fiat currencies. Everything has been put onto an electronic disk and electronic storage. So people think they're assets. If you ask people in the early 1970s and you said, would you accept owning an electronic virtual asset over your current asset? They'd say, no way. Are you kidding me? An electronic blip would be used as an asset? Well, now everything is an electronic asset. And everything has been rehypothecated so many times in such a fractional reserve system. Nothing is going to survive this in the electronic form. Now, I think Bitcoin will because it is nobody's debt. The interesting thing about the electronic assets is they're all somebody's debt. They all rely on a third person to stay in business. Bitcoin doesn't. It is an electronic asset unto itself. As long as you don't hold it in the third-party storage place, you know, like on an exchange or in an online wallet, it's your asset. It's an underlying asset. Everything electronic else is usually people's debt and relies on a third party to stay in business. So it's so much bigger than the crashing of unbacked fiat money. This is a global buy-in to electronic assets being worth something when you try to cash them in. And there'd be so many defaults of the third parties that nobody's going to stay in business.
About half of America, 160, 170 million folks, half the households at least, have some exposure to equities, to U.S. stocks. And very few people understand the fact that these are just, I might say, illusory means of ownership. You really have a tough time even getting physical shares, the certificates, cut and sent to your home. What can you really do with them? You can't walk up to your neighbor and say, hey, you know, here's 10 shares of Google or 10 shares of Tesla or Netflix. It's really a game of musical chairs. And when the music stops, as you say, the whole system is infused with debt and everything is debt-based. I mean, is that not the whole concept of the fractional reserve system? We're not going to know what hit us, are we, when this edifice finally implodes?
And that's what is talked about in the Fed Boston documents that I've, you know, analyzed and looked at for the last 10 years is, you know, how do we reallocate assets going forward is a big thing that they talk about. And Alan Greenspan actually came up with a great idea. After the system crashes, his idea was to reallocate assets according to Social Security balances, which is very unique because what it does, it kind of rewards the people who've worked, made the most money and worked the hardest, but not, you know, extraordinarily, because, you know, they cap Social Security balances every year, how much they take out of your paycheck. So it kind of, and it gets the older people who paid mostly into Social Security, they get most first because you got to take care of the old people first. So it's a great idea, but even in the Fed Boston comics and in the teacher's guide to these comics and in the discussions they have about it, they say, we don't know if the people are going to accept something like this.
I'm a listener who bought silver in 2011 at the peak around $50, and I've been burned. I'm not happy about it. Convince me to hold it past 50, and where will it be? Where will it go?
Well, I plan on holding silver until the manipulation ends. So as far as where it would go, I don't really know. Most people don't know. The ratio between gold and silver is 70-1 currently, and the amount of physical available is probably 5-1, you know, 5 ounces of gold for every 1 ounce of physical silver, because all the gold is being saved and all the silver needs to be used. So you can draw your own conclusions. I give many, many big numbers when I do the analysis, because that's what comes out. Without manipulation, we're going to see somewhere, at least for a short time, somewhere around a 1-1 ratio, price of gold to the price of silver.
I have a bevy of additional questions. We'll have to save that for another chat. Bix Weir, please tell people more about Road to Root A, what they'll find, and why they need to bookmark that site.
RoadToRuta.com is my website. I have a YouTube channel, Road to Ruta. It has a video on there explaining what the Road to Ruta theory is, because it takes a little while to get used to it. Come on by, put your email in, and you'll get free emails on information that I look at every day.
Great stuff. Can't wait to have you back.
Great. Sounds good.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes 3 deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. We'll be right back.